Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today in Kansas City. No coach is under more pressure this weekend than Kansas City's Andy Reid. A loss to the Houston Texans at Arrowhead Stadium would be inexcusable. It would further establish Reid as the passing Marty Schottenheimer, a terrific football coach who struggled in the postseason. The Chiefs are 9-point favorites over the Texans. Including the postseason, Andy Reid is 22-5 when he has an extra week to prepare for an opponent. There's no way the Chiefs should lose this game on Sunday. But as a longtime Chiefs fan who is intimately familiar with the work of Schottenheimer and Reid, I know exactly how Reid can blow this game. We witnessed it already this season. The Houston Texans came into Arrowhead Stadium in mid-October and snatched the soul of the Chiefs with a come-from-behind 31-24 victory. Andy Reid, as he's prone to do, abandoned his running game. In a game the Chiefs led 17-3 after one quarter and 24-3 after three quarters, Reid ran the ball 10 times the entire game. 10 times. Don't get fooled by the stat sheet. Patrick Mahomes' one run was a kneel down just before halftime. Kansas City never trailed by more than one score, but failed to find a way to balance their offense. Meanwhile, the Texans threw it 42 times and ran it 41. Andy Reid is one of the greatest play designers in NFL history and one of the worst game managers, too. It's not just clock management. It's game management. There's an easy explanation for why Reid loses track of the flow of the game. He spends too much time seated on the bench with Patrick Mahomes and ignoring his defensive unit. Reid is constantly managing Mahomes in the offense because he has a figurehead offensive coordinator in Eric Bieniemy. With the departures of Doug Peterson and Matt Nagy for head coaching jobs, the burden of guiding Kansas City's offense has fallen completely on the shoulders of Reid. It's too much for a head coach. In their regular season matchup, the Texans' offense destroyed KC's defense. Reid needed to use his offense to protect his overmatched defense. Reid needed to shorten the game with his running game, which averaged 5 yards per attempt on its 10 carries. I know the mainstream media has everyone convinced right now that Bieniemy is the black Mike Martz and that it's criminal he hasn't been handed a head coaching job. But the truth is, there's no compelling history of former running backs converting to offensive coordinators in the modern passing era of the NFL. The last one to do it on a high level was Dan Reeves with the Cowboys in the 1970s. As a head coach in the 80s and 90s, Reeves' reputation was he inhibited the passing game. My point is, Andy Reid has an inferior offensive staff, and he's overworked. It could cost the Chiefs on Sunday. I've already seen it happen this season. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analysts LeVar Arrington and Bucky Brooks. Marcellus, I'll start with you. Is Andy Reid under the most pressure this weekend?
Yes, no doubt. It's Andy Reid, and Andy Reid only just because of the long and short in terms of his resume and his career. Andy Reid needs to ascend where his actual genius warrants, which is an elite coach. Right now, he stands just short of being an elite coach all time because of the lack of a Super Bowl championship. So if you put Andy Reid into the conversation of a Super Bowl champion and then they win, guess what? Andy Reid is now where he properly deserves. This week, though, the long and short is, we know that resume, Andy, you've always come up short somehow, some way. And the short of it is, you're better than the Houston Texans. But I'm not the player that's built to blame it on coach. So he's under the most pressure because I know what the standard is. I know what the media, what we will do to Andy Reid if they lose this game. But when we lose the game, it's based on what we do. It's not based on certain play calls and certain situations. It comes down to critical moments. It comes down to critical situations. But my example is, as we're sitting here, this is the 20-year anniversary of the Music City Miracle, and that's going all around viral. Everybody's showing that play again. Was it a forward pass? Yes, it was, damn it. Or was it a lateral? No, it wasn't. Point being this, after that game, we lost the Super Bowl opportunity in the playoffs, obviously, and they fired our special teams coach, Bruce DeHaven. And I was like, why did they fire that man who was amazing at what he did? Who every day we sat in special teams meetings would say, hey, y'all, we going to L.A., right? That means lane assignments. We're going to L.A., lane assignments. He used to say it all the time. What happened on that play in the Music City Miracle? Everybody forgot they lane assignments, but we fired the coach for scapegoat purposes. I think that right now Andy Reid's not under that kind of fire, but still we're going to blame him unnecessarily.
No, I'll take this because Andy Reid is under the most pressure. But I think what Andy Reid has to do is ignore the outside noise. Jason, obviously, you were around Kansas City when Marty Schottenheim was there. And I think the one thing that Marty did, the outside noise eventually crept into the way that we performed in the locker room. The way that he called the game, he wanted to show risk-taking because that's how he was criticized. If I'm Andy Reid, if I could give Andy Reid any advice, be you. Your team is built to play the game in a video game fashion. If I'm playing Madden, the first team that I'm picking up are the Kansas City Chiefs. And because the Kansas City Chiefs have superior personnel coming off the bye week, I think Andy Reid has to call the game to blow the Houston Texans out of the stadium. Don't dial it back. You don't have a running game that can enable you to play safe. Put points on the board and play downhill. Your defense is playing better. I think he just needs to be himself. Call the game in a very aggressive
way. Do you, Andy?
I think the pressure is elsewhere. I think the most pressure is elsewhere, and I think it's based upon expectations. I think you did a very clear job of illustrating the lack of expectation for him to have success in the postseason. I think everything that you just illustrated and why he should be nervous or under pressure to get those results are the very reasons why Andy Reid and this perceivably
who's
overworked.
Under more pressure?
You know what? I would put it on LaFleur or on Curl. And the reason why I would put it on one of those two teams is based upon what you've paid Russell Wilson and the amount of responsibility that you've placed at his feet to be the guy that carries this Seattle Seahawks team. And this is one of those defining.
He already
moments.
Has a Super Bowl. Go, move on.
He does.
Move on.
But I'm really not based. You can't just base it off of he has a Super Bowl or Super Bowl appearance to say who has the most pressure. That could create the pressure. The bar is set for him to win a Super Bowl. Andy Reid's bar is not set to win a Super Bowl because he has not won one. So once you've set the bar winning a Super Bowl, then now you have the expectation of winning one.
Explain LaFleur.
Well, because I think that when you're looking at how strong a personality that Aaron Rodgers is and the type of season that they had, and is it given to the defensive side of the ball or is it given to the offensive side of the ball, I think their performance in this weekend's game will play out in a very interesting way between the head coach and its
LaFleur
stalwart.
LaFleur would be my number two. Not bad.
All right.
But – Andy Reid's under the most pressure because, again, this, like Marcella says, he is a great coach.
Great.
He's got to get it done in the postseason to justify and to further elevate his greatness. And I said it in the Whitlaw. I think he can blow it. I've seen enough of Andy Reid that I think he could blow this game against the Texans. They're 9-point favorites, but even at home, even coming off a bye, I can see them figuring out a way to Mickey Mouse and blow this game.
Yeah, Andy Reid has the defense and the offense he needs to finally get over that hump in Kansas City. There were times in Philadelphia he had it, they got close. Now this is the time to strike. If you just look at his years in Kansas City since 2013, this defense ranks up there in terms of what they can do. They're seventh right now in scoring defense. So what does that mean? With the fifth best scoring offense, that's probably your best balance that you've seen outside of the first, second year, the first year he was there, when he's trying to learn and get his guys in, and there's a lot of turnover. So this is the opportunity. Everything's fully matured. Your system's in
play.
Can
he blow it?
Can he blow it?
Yeah, this weekend.
No, he can't blow it. One, I don't think he will blow it. They're better. They're superior to Houston. Two, he won't blow it because if something goes wrong with this team, it's going to be because of lack of discipline, a D Ford play or something like that. That's not all on coach. Coach tells you what to do. You still have to be the player to actually execute that. I wouldn't blame coach for those moments.
No, I wouldn't blame him. And I think, look, part of Andy Reid's issues, he grew up under Mike Holmgren. Having played under those guys in Green Bay when Andy was the tight end coach, Mike Holmgren always viewed the game from an offensive standpoint. So the one thing they think about, score, score, score. They don't think about playing the game in a complimentary fashion. To me, the Kansas City Chiefs are the vintage Golden State Warriors. They play with the three ball. They're explosive playmakers, Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, Pat Mahomes. They need to shoot the three ball and blow them out the building. Trying to get him to play a complimentary style, that's not who he is. Mm. I think he has to keep the pressure on the opponent by going for it and really trying to put a 40 spot on the Houston Texans.
Can they blow it this weekend?
They won't blow it.
They won't blow it.
They can blow it.
They can, but they won't.
They can blow it.
Well, that's every game. They can blow it. Miami beat New England. Right.
But they won't blow it. I agree. They can blow it, but they won't blow it. And again, when I say most pressure and in terms of can he blow this, sure, he can blow it, but I think he does make it to the next round. I think the further he goes, the pressure level will go up for Andy Reid because now he's getting closer to that place that he has not been able to conquer.
And the competition is stronger higher you go. So then
you're assuming
he's
really going to play against Baltimore next week, right?
Yeah. So. Coaching is better, too. The coaching is better when you get down the line. Yep. I don't know if Houston is coached well enough to push the pace on him.
Mm-hmm. I think that we saw J.J. Watt come off the street and make plays that turned the game around against Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. I think J.J. Watt will be even better this week. I'm not going to go out here. I mean, they're 9-point favorites. They're at home. The guy's record coming off a bye is tremendous. I see the Chiefs getting off to a tremendous start. But I just saw it in mid-October, 17-3. They had this game and gave up 20 points in the second quarter and then wet the bed the second half of the game. He can screw this up. Will he? I don't think so. At home, coming off a bye, I don't think so. But I'm not expecting. I think the guy is overworked. I think I'm not kidding. When I see it, I've never seen another coach spend as much time with their quarterback, head coach, as Andy Reid does, and I think he loses track of what's actually going on in the Florida
Bills.
Game.
Yeah, you met the Bills, and they were overmatched.
J.J. Watt came off the street to play the Bills.
And they were overmatched. Yeah, we knew what you meant, though.
Yeah.
But they were overmatched and outmanned in that game. And I don't see this Buffalo team as good as they are and have played. I don't see them being as good as Kansas City.
No, and to your point about you always talk about Andy Reid hanging with the quarterback, that's something that Mike Holmgren used to do with Brett Favre. That's something where Andy Reid picked that up. He used to do that with Donovan McNabb.
Right.
In general, what he wants to be the head coach, offensive coordinator, and he trusts his defensive coordinator to do his job. Because he has so much trust in Steve Spagnuolo, he feels like he can go to the other end and say, hey, Steve, you got this. I'm going to focus on making sure that we can get this offense right, which is why he's always around Pat Mahomes.
And my problem with that is, because, again, you can trust your defensive coordinator, but to the head coach has, oh, man, we're in this kind of game. If I don't protect my defense today, we're going to lose this because our defense is out of sorts. And that's what I think he loses track of in the flow of the game. It's like, whoa, I got to bail my defense out here instead of just trust Spagnuolo. Spags has got this. He didn't have it in mid-October. Hopefully the Chiefs defense has improved. Hopefully we won't be in that position.
We talk about physical fitness a lot, but there's another side to the game that's just as important. I'm talking about mental fitness. Calm, the number one app for sleep and meditation, has teamed up with LeBron James to help you train your mind. LeBron and Calm know that your mind is like any other muscle in your body, and Calm can help you train your brain so you sleep better, have less stress, and perform at your best. For LeBron James, sleep is an important part of his mental fitness routine. He says, "Getting good sleep and finding time to rest is one of the most valuable things I can do for my body and mind." And if you head to calm.com/sports40, you'll get 40% off a Calm premium membership. With Calm, you have access to nature scenes LeBron loves and so much more, like sleep stories and meditations. For a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron in using Calm with a 40% discount to an annual membership at calm.com/sports40. Unlock content to help you focus, ease stress, and sleep better. Get started at calm.com/sports40. That's calm.com/sports40.
LeVar Arrington's back. We're joined now by Super Bowl champion Brady Papinga. It's time now for a big story sponsored by the KFC $3 Famous Bowl.
Yeah.
Try it spicy. All right, let's move to Dallas, where Jerry Jones and the Cowboys were all smiles as they introduced new head coach Mike McCarthy yesterday. Of course, the last time McCarthy was on the sidelines, things were falling apart between him and Aaron Rodgers. And yesterday, Rodgers had some interesting comments on his old head coach's new job.
We've had a lot of success down there, and I know that I think that that was probably one of the reasons. You know, we've obviously won Super Bowl there, but we've won some big games down there over the years. So I'm not surprised that, Jerry had an infatuation with Mike because, you know, we've had some really good performances. I thought maybe he would go somewhere where he had maybe some GM opportunity as well. But I'm happy for him. I sent him a text. He sent me a text back.
All right, we had a lot of success in Dallas. And Jerry was infatuated by what we did. You think Rodgers is actually taking a shot at Mike McCarthy?
Where you get that from? I know it's just a question, but how even get to the place of that's a question? No, I don't think he's taking a shot. First of all, he's watching our show because I said those exact same things a couple of days ago about Mike McCarthy. I think that really had an impact on Jerry Jones watching a team that he assessed as less talented than his, then came to Dallas several times and beat his Dallas Cowboys, including winning the Super Bowl championship in Jerry's world. So I think Aaron Rodgers is just being a person who's stating the facts here. And as he's saying it, as a matter of fact, I don't see anything about this that shows that he's trying to be sly or take a shot. They had tremendous success. What, 8 straight postseason appearances, 5 division titles, 3 NFC championship appearances, and won a Super Bowl together? But they broke up. And you know this as being the king of the breakup. Ask you right then when it happened. There's nothing but bad to talk about. But let those emotions subside. Give it a little time. Something kept y'all together that long, and that's what he's trying to allude
if
to.
If my ex went on and found a new man and I wanted to compliment her, I'd be like, oh, man, he got a hell of a catch there. I would say, oh, we had some good times together. We did some great things. I could see why he would look at what we did and think that guy's responsible.
And that's not the proper response always. That's why you're single still. One, but two, you know what? You got to talk about, like, you got to prop him up and also be realistic and state the facts. What I loved about it is he actually talked about what he knew, which is what we did was tremendous. Hopefully he could do it over there.
He has a tad bit of dry humor, sarcasm, and I think he was being sarcastic, but I do not think he was throwing shade. Honestly, we talked about the whole nepotism deal and, you know, relationships and all kinds of different ways things can happen. Same people you see going up or the same people you could see going down. Aaron Rodgers isn't a spring chicken, right? So why not say we? That's keeping your pieces in the right places on the board if you're playing chess, not checkers, right? So in reality, why not give that man his properties.
Dap him up.
Right? You may need a quarterback and say 2-3 years
I can say,
of my caliber.
Oh, you know? Wow. Dallas got a great coach. Mike was tremendous. What a great decision by Dallas. When you start talking about we instead of Mike, we didn't get the job. Mike did.
truth. But if he's taking ownership over Mike's success, which that's what it sounds Ooh. Like here, then they did it together. Because Mike could sit there and easily say, we are the reason why the Green Bay Packers are a high seed with a bye week going into the playoffs this year. I mean,
oh, I got it.
Yeah, you're onto something there.
Yeah, he is. He got me thinking over here. I'm vexed.
Yeah, but the thing is Mike McCarthy's success is absolutely a function of not only the environment in Green Bay, because in Green Bay, Mike had full autonomy over the team. Ted Thompson would bring in the guys, and he wouldn't at all give any input on who to play, when to play him, no matter how much he paid him in free agency, no matter how high they were drafted. And that was liberating for Mike. And then, obviously, they had some good players.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was one of them. Okay, guys? So the bottom line is...
You up here right
is
now.
Is that for Aaron to include himself in the
we throwing shade at Coach.
That's what he did. We caught that.
Aaron just throwing shade.
The reality is Mike's a good coach. But a lot of his success was a full-on collective effort of the organization, the players. And so for Aaron to include himself into that and say, yeah, we is absolutely correct. And that's why I'm going to tell you right now, McCarthy's going to struggle in Dallas because he's never dealt with an owner that's always looking over his shoulder. He's never dealt with a situation where all of a sudden the owner pays a guy like Ezekiel Elliott. What are you paying, $50 million guaranteed? What if all of a sudden McCarthy's like,
but
hey, man.
I've never had an Ezekiel Elliott.
And y'all never even had free agents.
You had Amon Green.
Y'all never had
Amon Green.
Yeah. Amon Green's had that helmet.
Amon Green's at the end. You had Armand. He had him at the end. He didn't have him in the beginning.
But I'm just going to say, if all of a sudden he's not playing Ezekiel, I guarantee you Jerry's going to get on the phone and say, hey, Mike, what the heck you doing?
But Mike had to deal with a different dynamic in Green Bay where Ted said, look, I went out there shopping. You just got to cook this up.
No.
And that's different because Ted Thompson, one, y'all didn't even get free agents. You couldn't even.
We got free agents.
Big time free agents.
Charles Woodson.
He didn't have any options at that time. Don't do that to Woodsy. I love my boy, but he didn't have options. It wasn't the same. Keep going.
Yeah, they got Reggie White.
We're trying to get LeVar.
What year are you talking about?
We were trying. And I almost
tried. That's my point. Don't do that.
You didn't answer the question. Is he taking a little shot at McCarthy with his
He's not taking a shot at him. He's just being honest and just saying, yeah, I mean, McCarthy's a good coach, like I am. McCarthy's a good coach, but there was more to it than just his coaching
process. That's a shot.
That's not it.
That's a shot, Brady.
No.
You do know that's
taking
a shot. That every single
he ain't taking a shot at his coach. He's taking a shot
Say what you just said again.
Well, hold on. Every successful team you're telling me is a function of that coach. Is that what you're saying?
Say what you just said again.
I said that our success with the Green Bay Packers just wasn't all because Mike was a heck of a coach.
That's a shot.
It's part
that's
of
that's taking, a shot.
That's taking
equation.
A shot.
Aaron didn't do
that's
that.
Taking a shot.
He did do it.
Hold on. I'm gonna tell you what Aaron did. I'm gonna tell you what Aaron did. The reason why he said we, you got to remember some of the other comments were, I thought Mike was gonna take a role where he had GM responsibilities.
Thank you.
So here's the thing.
Bring
the reason why he's saying we is because he doesn't think that situation is good for his coach, who he thinks is a damn good coach. Damn good coach going to a bad situation. I'm going to say we did a great thing because when that goes wrong in my projection, I don't want y'all to think I gave him support fully because I knew that that situation wasn't good for him. So that's a shot at Jerry.
You just said he didn't support him fully. I don't want to say something that says I support that decision fully.
Because that's not outside of Aaron Rodgers' hands. He can't control that situation. Jerry undermining what Mike McCarthy can do. Great coach, but he may not be in the right situation, may not get the great results. I don't want that coming back on me.
But he didn't have to have enough of a quote for you to be able to extrapolate that much from it. He did not have to say that much. Yeah. So if you were able to pull that from what he said,
I just combined two
then
quotes.
He's throwing shade.
That's to not
me,
shade.
To me, I don't think
and Mike McCarthy, did y'all understand what I just said?
I did.
He said, I love this dude.
Yes.
You ain't who you think you are, Cowboys, guess what? This great thing is going to go to that
He never said, I love this dude. He said,
we
had a lot of success down there.
Right. And he's saying when it's not a we thing, that thing is different. But I believe in him and I.
To me, the way I interpret it is, if there is no we, there is no success. And so if it ain't me and Mike...
True.
What did you really see down in Dallas?
Well, why does that have
Stop
to be?
That.
Why is that shade though? Why can't that just be you may need my services at some point in time? I was thinking he may be a GM. What is a GM going to do?
Will you say that?
Seek talent. Okay, well, if you end up being somewhere being a GM
Wait.
And I need a job
say
at
it.
Some point in time, I gave you a vote of confidence here.
Come on.
You may want to bring me in.
Come on. He's
why is
Aaron
that? Why is that
lobbying for his next position?
Nah, he
can stand
that.
On his own two feet.
You don't have to lobby.
More than the number of
no, let's not be stubborn up
that's
here.
That's not lobbying.
This is good. Let's bring it home.
That's being smart.
Let's bring it home. The relationship, the reason why you broke up with her and you still saying we had a great thing because you thought she was an amazing woman. Woman, you don't believe in the dude she's with, so you're not going to talk about what she is to that situation. You're just going to talk about how great it was between you. That's what he's doing right now because of the Cowboys.
If that's the case, you ain't gonna say nothing. If I don't like the dude, if I don't like the dude my ex is with, I'm not saying nothing.
You gotta say something or that's shade.
I'm not giving them the opportunity to feel good about me addressing them.
Easiest thing to say.
Right?
The easiest thing to say is, Mike, when he was here, proved to be one of the greatest coaches in the NFL, and Dallas has landed him. I think it's going to be tremendous.
Why say that if you don't believe
it? It wasn't what it was.
He doesn't believe it. You're right.
And I didn't
believe
it either.
But he doesn't believe it because of it, not because of him.
I played
not because
there.
Of Mike, because of
guys,
Dallas.
I played there.
Here you go.
Listen. He, amongst players, knew that Mike was a good head coach. But there's no way in this world we ever sat there going, man, this guy is legendary. And it's not shit.
All
it's
he had
reality.
To do was say, I'm happy for him. He
we're
sent me a text.
LeVar,
take the blinders off. Yeah. Man just explained exactly what Aaron Rodgers thinks.
I'm out of that. LeVar, you didn't play
right.
For
I did not. It's
so,
shade.
So let him go.
Aaron Rodgers.
You just said it wasn't shade.
But I don't
it
believe
is.
It's shade. I don't
but
believe it's
shade. But it is shade.
It's just calling it as it
he
is.
He said it as it is.
Who has the blinders on?
It's okay to acknowledge there's more to the success of a team than the head coach. It's okay.
He just said... Okay. Dallas, y'all hired a good coach. If you wanted a great one, you should have brought me. Whitlock and Wiley, Brady Papinga, and Bucky Brooks are back. Let's move to the NFL playoffs, where we will see showdowns between some of the league's top rushing attacks this weekend, with the Titans and the Ravens facing off in Baltimore, while the 49ers host the Vikings in Santa Clara. In fact, the run game has had a major resurgence in the NFL this season. Despite the NFL's passing obsession, five of the top six rushing teams made the postseason this year, while the Chiefs were the only top passing team to make the playoffs. Are we seeing proof the pass-happy NFL is entering a new era?
No. And I'm just saying that because it's perplexing, because these numbers suggest that I should say yes. But I'm going to say no. I'm going to stick to my guns. And my top line is, obviously, we're talking about the top teams. And when you're talking about a top team, you're talking about one of the teams that had a lot of wins. And you talk about how did they win? They usually had a lead. And when you have a lead, you have the luxury of running the football. And that's going to suggest where the running numbers are going to get a little inflated. But I go back to just conventional thinking. And being on the defensive side, if a team comes out and it's a 50-50 proposition, are they going to run the ball against us or throw the ball against us? Me as a defender, I want you to run the ball against us. The average yard per rush is 4.3 in the NFL this year. Average yard per completion is 11.4. Now, even if you factor in all the completions, incompletions, everything, it's still 8.1. You have a better opportunity to throw the football than you do in running the football and having success. So I'm just looking at all the top teams. And you're looking at this year, and then we could say last year, interesting. Let's go over the last decade. Only one Super Bowl champion has finished in the bottom half in passing before having rushing. What does that mean? You can win a Super Bowl with a bad running game, but you ain't going to win it without a good passing game. So I'm still leaning with the throwing.
Now, so what has happened is that the league goes full circle. So for the previous 10 years, you talked about the passing game dominating. So what do teams do? They build their teams to stop the pass. So they put those light little pass rushes on the field. They got the little DBs out there. So what do you do to counter that? You now go back and play big boy football. More 21 personnel, two backs, one tight end, two wide receivers, more 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends, and you run the little guys off the field. The teams that are on this list, Baltimore, the Niners, the Titans, the Seahawks, the Vikings, they're all 21 personnel teams. They're all old school, two back, run it downhill, run them off the field. And because it's more advantageous now to play big boy football against the little guys, we're seeing the running game return and kind of have a resurgence in the league.
And I'm shocked, Marcellus, that you said you'd rather have a team run the ball at you
versus
Right, well, you get paid
second
more.
Second and six versus second and two?
Yeah, but you get paid more to sack the quarterback.
Oh, that's a good point. I already got my money, though.
If you're stopping the run and all of a sudden it gets to the third and long or a predictable passing situation, you're kind of gassed a little bit from having had to stop the run. I'm going to tell you that. And what's gone on, just like Bucky says, is that exactly that. The league has tilted so far to stopping the pass, to covering, to rushing the passer, that now these defenses are exploitable to where you can just pound the ball down their throats and you're going to do, like I just mentioned, you're going to minimize the impact of a pass rush. We saw it last year in the Super Bowl with Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
What did the Patriots do? They said, we're going to double-team you with two of our 300-pound guys. We're going to see how you hold up. And sure enough, after a couple of snaps of stopping the run, okay, here comes a passing down. He wasn't the same guy jumping out of his stance because he is, you know, he was taxed from having to stop the run. So teams are seeing that. And absolutely another thing is that zone blocking scheme. You know, Shanahan made it popular in the late 90s. It is a plug-and-play system. It doesn't matter if you draft a guy in the first round or if you get a free agent off the street. You can get a guy in there that runs hard, that has one-cut ability, has patience, has some vision. And so that makes it to where you don't have to rely on a workhorse running back, and it gives you some type of freedom in terms of being able to build your roster in other fashions.
You know, listening to you guys talk and just thinking about this, I do think that we're – I wouldn't say we're entering a new era, but I do think we're seeing a trend that is not done continuing. And I think it's really going to be accentuated because I look at this and I look at these numbers and go, it just the Ravens are winning the Super Bowl. Because their running is so pronounced. They're averaging 206 yards per game. Second place is 144.1. It's so pronounced and it's so unique in a league that for the past two decades has been all about the passing game. I just don't think you can, in the moment, in the season, counter what the Ravens are doing. It's going to take a complete offseason to slow down this Ravens team, but I think you're going to see more teams commit to the running game this offseason because of the success the Ravens are having. And so I don't know if a new era is what we're about to see, but this trend's going to continue because I think Baltimore is going to win the Super Bowl and it's going to make more teams say, how can we maximize our running game?
The trend continues, as Bucky said, in a cyclical fashion just because you're going to zig when everyone else is zagging. So I respect that when you come out there and you got your nickel or dime personnel, we're about to slam it down your throat. And all we have to do is show deception where you're going to sit there and run out your nickel package and then we're going to run the football. Watching the Ravens live, went to the Rams game, watching the Ravens on TV probably every week, it felt like. You look at them, that power game is deceptive. And more than that, it's almost a it's such a balancing act between the finesse of it, because you really are protecting your quarterback. But then you look the next play, this is a heavy package, and we're student body with a quarterback. The math is just insane. So I think that what's happening right now, with the packages out there, that's going to lend itself in the now, but that's going to change going forward.
I want to add one more thing that I want Bucky and Brady to react to. I wonder if this isn't easier to practice. I think the passing game requires so much timing and rhythm and precision, and I think for offensive linemen, I'm just practicing pass setting and all the intricacies is a lot harder than just put your fingers in the ground or come off the football and move ahead in the zone blocking scheme. I wonder if this isn't a smarter way of playing football given the practice limitations.
I think it's a smarter way to play football because you have an influx of young quarterbacks that are coming into the league. Forever, we've always heard the running game is the quarterback's best friend. So now we have all these young quarterbacks that are about to pop. Lamar Jackson is there. Jimmy Garoppolo, I still would consider a young quarterback. Kirk Cousins is not a young quarterback. He's one that needs to be propped up.
Yep.
The running game enables you to really protect your quarterback, control the game, minimize your turnovers, which gives you an opportunity to win, and protect your defense. There's so many benefits to really committing to being a dominant run team. You still have to pass, but running the ball gives you an opportunity to win more games in today's fashion.
And I'll say this, like the new era is here, maybe not in terms of just the running game, but the quarterback running. That is going to be something that's replicated from here on out. Because I'll tell you what, whenever I watch a defense play against the Ravens, I cringed. Because in college, that's all we faced was running quarterbacks. And so we had a pretty good plan against playing running quarterbacks. And one is you got to be decisive. And two is you got to be disciplined. You got to have assignments across the board that are executed. And what's happening with all these NFL defenses is they're kind of in the middle. Everybody's trying to play everything. Hmm. And the Ravens are exploiting it because Lamar Jackson is a master at being able to read the defenses, hide the ball, make it to where you don't even know where the ball is at until it's out the gate.
Right.
So to me, the running game is going to be more popular, but it's going to be led by the quarterback running the ball. And the other thing is just as, you know, footwork, eye control, those kinds of things that are fundamental for a quarterback, protecting themselves when they run the ball, whether it's sliding, getting out of bounds, will also become a fundamental so that the age-old stigma against the running quarterback is the guy can't stay healthy. Well, Russell Wilson has proved that. It's not the case. He's run more than anybody, and he's the master at sliding. So you'll see that as these quarterbacks begin to run more and more, that the fundamental of avoiding those direct hits will also be something that's taught and implemented. So I think that's the new era, the quarterback running.
Bucky Brooks and Brady Papinga are back. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. All right, take it away, homeboy.
Yes, sir. Let's move to Carolina, where the Panthers introduced their new head coach, Matt Rhule, yesterday. The question on a lot of people's minds is what hiring Rhule means for Cam Newton. Yesterday, Rhule wouldn't comment on Cam's future, but said he thinks the QB is a winner. But today, the Panthers released a hype video, and the former MVP was nowhere to be seen. Take a look.
I will work tirelessly each day to bring you guys a championship, to bring you a championship. I promise you, you'll get my best. Keep pounding.
All right, guys, is this a sign the Panthers are moving on from Cam Newton?
Yeah, probably. I think it's...
probably.
It's Yeah, I think it's a sign.
Get off that fence. It's yes over. Or no, you know what this is.
Yeah, I think it's probably a sign, or at least they're taking a long think about it.
Definitely a sign. Definitely going to happen. Remember when LeBron left Wiggins' name out of that letter? How long did that take for Wiggins to be in Minnesota that day? Look, I'm going to say it like this. You do not become the face of a franchise by accident. And you don't lose that status without purpose. And he has lost that status. When I was the man, let me tell you, every ticket stub, yeah, billboard, game day cover, Wally, mini helmets everywhere. And when I wasn't the man, hey, y'all remember me? No, because they had a purpose. They know who to designate. You think head of marketing is going to give the approval on this video that is going to go viral? And the face of the franchise is gone. Christian McCaffrey's the best player, but the face of the franchise is not in it. Nah, this is all did with in purpose and intent. Cam, you're gone.
Nah. They just keep their option. They're just keeping their options open. He hasn't played the last 2 years. They even got any video footage of him.
Oh, yeah. They got any footage of
Coach
from Temple.
Like, this is going to have some. They don't have any footage of
Temple.
They could have shown him with a cigar.
Nah.
One of his videos.
They're keeping their options open because Matt Rhule, even in the presser, he said, I haven't had enough time to evaluate the roster. I don't know what's going on in the 2020 quarterback class. What he wants to do is, he wants to take his time. He wants to see if Cam is going to buy into the culture. If Cam buys into the culture, there's a very good chance that Cam will be there. This $19 million hit that you guys keep screaming about?
Yes.
Jared Goff is at what, 30, 32, 34? Oh, Russell, he's a cheap option, so they still can keep Cam and draft another one. Matt Rhule wants to take his time, assess all of his options before they make a decision on their quarterback.
The problem is Cam Newton is not a we kind of guy. He's a me kind of guy. Mm. And I saw that firsthand. I was covering their game, playoff game a few years back. And in the middle of the playoff game, he goes and throws, by himself, by the way, a tantrum, like a little taller. And I'm like, what the heck is – what's going on here? And then he runs out there and plays ball. I'm like, this guy needs kind of like special treatment because he is not a guy that falls in line. And when you got a college coach that's where he's had his success with college football players that are all falling in line – there's no way you're going to couple him with a guy that's kind of a loose cannon when I'm, talk about Cam Newton. And so, like, you talk about bringing in a young guy, that'd be terrible. You bring in a young guy, you got Cam Newton kind of undermining everything you're doing. It's not a good situation. So he's a goner.
I tend to agree with Brady. And I'm sure we'll see some kind of IG post or video from Cam in response showing all of his highlights that should have been in this highlight package. But yeah, they probably are moving on. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it's like Bucky says, you just hold that little thread just in case. The guy is cheap, and you sit there and hope, when I do meet with him, is the guy going to come in here in one of these crazy outfits of his with his hair all wild? Or is he really in a humble spirit and coming to me like, Matt, let's do this together. Teach me how you want me to play the game. Let's blah, blah. So I think Cam could throw a Hail Mary and save the situation. And the organization's probably not expecting it. But if he does, it's only $19 million, and the guy's got talent.
$19 million. He can't throw no damn Hail Mary if they don't give him the ball. And they ain't giving him the ball. I'm the king of nuance up here. But damn it, this is definitive. He is guilty by reputation. You think that this coach is going to come in here. I know the money's attractive. But and Drew, out the interview process, didn't say, so what's up with Cam? What y'all going to do with Cam? What's upstairs suggesting with Cam before I get there? His quotes tell you that he is out the door. Coach says, I hope to coach Cam, but I don't know enough about really everything that's kind of happening right now. Mm. That's dancing. You know why he's dancing? Because he already knows what's upstairs and he knows what we have to project. I just can't come in the door and then just get rid of Cam Newton. You know how much equity I will lose with this franchise from day one if Cam goes and balls and we come slow out the gate. The answer is already written. You do not put out promotional videos without your top two players in it. And that makes no sense. So I just see it from experience. He's gone.
Whitlock and Wiley, LeVar Arrington and Bucky Brooks are back. Let's move to Kansas City, where so far Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy has been passed over in this year's round of head coaching hires and doesn't appear to be happy about it. Bieniemy was a top African-American coaching candidate to interview this year, and he has now been turned down by 6 teams over the last 2 years. His agent said the situation is, quote, discouraging to say the least. All right, the question I want us to answer is, what advice would you give Eric Bieniemy?
From this vantage point, the first thing I would say is even in this game of trying to get a job, which is a subjective game, coming from a football career where he had a 9-year football career, our job is not so subjective. It's objective. What are your stats? What are your numbers? What are your measurables? What is your production? When you move and cross over into the real world, you have to have that ability to self-correct. So one, he's been in 7 meeting rooms for potential hires. What are you doing wrong in those meetings? Mm-hmm. And wrong can sound like, oh, how do you know you're messing up or something? Because it didn't go right for you. So you can say to whatever you want to do, like how we talk to kids now, well, they need to work on. To me, that's like, what's wrong? What do you need to work on in those rooms? Because you can win a room, but let's be real, you can also lose a room. Mm-hmm. And so you can walk in with the paper that suggests you are, and then you can walk out and they say, something didn't. Whatever that is, because it has to be something you would tie together, your own self-reflection. I'm not talking about my perspective of what happened in those meetings. The other thing I would say is, don't make this heavier than it already is, brother. Mm-hmm. You climbing up a mountain. Mm-hmm. I tell kids all the time when I go to high school, man, don't fill that backpack up with unnecessaries. Mm-hmm. You climbing a mountain in terms of opportunity. White or black, let alone black. So that's a different Kilimanjaro mountain. And if you're going to do that, all the talk, all the criticisms, anything that's coming out on your behalf, whether it's your agent, your friends, people who say that they're your friends.
It's a bad look.
Don't let that become a weight to your situation. Keep the grind going, self-correct, and then it'll work.
I would tell them something that my dad has told me, and it's a quote from Steve Martin. Be so good they can't ignore you. Just focus on the job that you have. Be great in Kansas City. Let them see the work that you do with the Chiefs and appreciate how you are, not only as a leader, but as a tactician. Everyone has given Andy Reid credit for the play calls. Look, Matt Nagy, Doug Peterson got jobs. They didn't really call plays. So, look, you know what the standard is. Mm. But what you can do is make sure that this offense continues to operate at a level that looks like a video game. Put points up to the point where they have to say, man, Eric Bieniemy, Andy Reid, this offense is innovative, is revolutionary. We need to tap into his mind to see what he's doing. Because even though being a head coach is more than being a play caller, you want him to understand that. Look, dazzle them with the things that you do.
You know, a lot of times your reputation has to precede you in these types of situations. I'm thinking he probably needs to have stronger advocacy. You know, get away from having your agent try to be a spokesperson for you. I know he means well and is trying to you know, establish your value and get it talked about and discussed. But if that advocacy comes from you and out of your own camp, per se, I think it devalues what it is that you could possibly bring to the table. I think he has to really focus in on, as you guys said, continue to do your job very well and grow your network of advocates. Because I think if he has the right advocate talking and going ahead of him, a lot of times these roundtable discussions that are taking place off camera behind the scenes are really the people who are saying, listen, this is the guy you need to hire. This guy right here. And when you have that type of advocacy from somebody who has shared values, then you're probably running a better chance of, even if you don't interview well or you may not pass the eye test per se, you probably still have a strong chance of getting that job.
I'm going to tell him, I'm going to follow in off of Marcellus's point. Don't get caught up in the noise because there's a lot of noise right now about Eric Bieniemy. And much of that noise, just quite honestly, Eric, is uninformed. It's people that have never played the game or covered the game that have a Twitter understanding of football and how these hiring practices go, and they're giving you bad information and convincing you that you're a victim. Ignore the noise would be one. Because if you listen to some football people or people that actually have either covered the game or played a little bit, they're going to have some different advice for you and a different set of facts and information. Running backs don't translate to head coaches in football. Anthony Lynn is the only one in the NFL right now. Running backs, there's not one offensive coordinator other than Eric Bieniemy who's an offensive coordinator in this league. Think about who speaks in front of a team. A linebacker a lot of times, a quarterback a lot of times, a safety a lot of times. You know who doesn't? Running backs and defensive linemen. In general, I'm speaking in general. And so just being a former running back and converting to offensive coordinator, there's a reason why he's not getting a lot of credit for that offense. It's because no one really believes he has much to do with it. And so if he really does have a lot to do with it and he's talented, what he's going to have to do is go somewhere to get out from underneath Andy Reid's shadow and prove that he can do it. And the reason I say that is, as a journalist, I've been in this exact same position. First time I worked at ESPN, it was for ESPN Page 2. They paid me pennies on the dollar, and I was a beast. But it was Bill Simmons' kingdom, and I was caught underneath his politics. And so what I had to do, because I knew I was a beast, I went to America Online Sports, AOL Sports. No one had ever heard of it. But I was like, no, I'm going to go show y'all. And so I went to AOL and showed everybody who I was. And I could work anywhere I wanted to after that. Neil Scarborough, who works here, is the one who hired me at AOL Sports. I'm not lying. Anybody can tell you the story. I went there and was a beast and was on Oprah Winfrey's show that year, the year I went there. And everybody over at ESPN that thought I wasn't good enough and was caught up in them politics and I didn't look the part, little fat, lazy dude, blah, 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 blah. I proved to everybody. I had to get off from underneath other people's shadow to show who I was. That's the path he's going to have to take as a former running back. The path isn't there for them as head coaches, not there for them as OCs. And then when you add in some of the baggage from his earlier years in life, he's going to have to take a unique path. So I'm telling you, out of sincere concern and support of you, what you need to do in order to get out from underneath the narrative that's stopping you from getting a head coaching job. A lot of other people are just going, oh, it's just racism, Eric, and blah, blah, blah. They're lying to you, and or they just don't know.
So here's what I'm going to say about your running back point, and here's what I'm going to say is wrong. Sylvester Croom was a former running back coach who became an offensive coordinator, did it in Detroit, eventually was a head coach down in Mississippi State. But here's why I say people are missing the boat when they're looking at head coaches and offensive coordinators, and they only view it as the quarterback. When you really look at this game, the running back is the guy that touches all aspects of the offense. The run game, pass protection, routes, The running back is central to all of those elements.
Is he central? And Bucky, we just keeping it 1,000% real here. I played football all the way up to age 22. You guys played longer. Running backs, again, just because they're central to, doesn't mean they have a full understanding a lot of times.
No, look, like we can pick and choose. We've had guys that have come into the league who've been able to just show up on Saturday and Sunday and go play. But I'm saying, when you do the interview and you ask him, great running backs have an understanding of all aspects. Having played with Marcus Allen and other great running backs, they can tell you exactly what's going on in all aspects. The running back is actually uniquely qualified to be able to do all of the stuff that you need to do on offense. So I wouldn't just cast it out and say running backs cannot
run and manage an offense. I'm not saying cannot. I'm just saying the pattern is, again, you find a lot of quarterbacks, linebackers, offensive centers, safeties that convert to coaching.
But it also goes to something that has always been an issue, going all the way back to the 60s. Head coaches come from positions of centrality.
Yeah.
The positions of centrality are center, quarterback, middle linebacker, and free safety. Yeah. Going all the way back to the 60s, blacks were not allowed to play in those positions because they were thinking man's positions. Until we kind of wipe that away and realize that leaders and offensive architects and defensive architects can come from other positions, we always will have to overcome that stigma.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. A lot of times, though, in these football deals, if you think about who the leaders of these teams are, and 70% of these teams are black. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about now, over the last 30 years.
True.
The safeties, linebackers, offensive centers, quarterbacks, those tend to be the leaders of your team, regardless of color. From Mike Singletary to whomever, I could rattle off, to Ronnie Lott, to those tend to be the lead. Those are the guys that get up and command a room and speak in front of the team a lot of times. And again, if you talk to people that talk about where Eric Bieniemy is struggling, getting up and winning the room in an interview, he's struggling there.
Okay, let me say this. I have a handful to throw at you guys real quick. But the first thing is, they say he does speak when Andy Reid doesn't speak. So he's second in command in terms of addressing the team. Travis Kelce went on record and talked about that. They also said that some of the play calling, no, he doesn't call the plays necessarily, but he's in Patrick Mahomes' headset, not Andy Reid, it's him. And some of the early success that they had this year came from him saying, let's lean into some power running instead of our finesse game, shooting our three-pointers, as you say. But let's talk directly to Eric Bieniemy once again. What is advice? Advice is something you already know, but you want someone else to tell you. All right, so let's get there. It's not too profound right here. His agent said that we're looking for the standard so we can know what to do so he can get a job. In this world of getting a job, there is no standard. So your agent's already doing you a disservice, telling you look for an objective measure in a world that's based on biases and networks and just what I like. So that's a problem. I want Eric to realize that success is not linear. That means sometimes it doesn't happen to you when you want it to happen. Adjust your calendar and do some self-correction in that moment. And what your dad said is the best advice I have, which is be better than your best excuse. And that's what it has to come down to. Eric Bieniemy, just be better than that, brother.
I will say again, go somewhere and prove it. Another play. If they won't give it to you here, I look at Pep Hamilton going to the XFL. Mm-hmm. Love the move. This guy early on had a narrative he was going to be an NFL head coach. It didn't work out for him. He's gone over to the XFL to prove it again that he's a head coaching candidate. Sometimes that's just what you have to do. Eric Bieniemy was an OC in Colorado for 2 years. It didn't go well. Mm-hmm. 119th ranked offense out of 124 teams. They went 4-21 the 2 years. The problems he had off the field with the arrest, he's got to overcome a lot of these things, and he may have to do it out from underneath Andy Reid's shadow. That's just the path some people have to take. All right, before we go, I'd like to follow up on the point I made yesterday about Colin Kaepernick hurting the reputation of black men and potentially damaging the progress of black NFL coaches. Over the course of my lifetime, I've witnessed a troubling cultural shift among black men. I was born a year after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. Coming up in that era, I felt pressure from my parents, grandparents, and church to carry myself in a way that brought honor and respect to my family and Black people. Here in the last 10 years, particularly in the social media era, the cultural pressure on Black people seems to be to never criticize the behavior of Black people. We are to act as the only behavior worthy of critique and refinement is the behavior of white people, and any Black person who dares to believe self-improvement is more valuable than the improvement of others. Colin Kaepernick embodies this cultural phenomenon. He foolishly protested police brutality at a football game rather than police headquarters. It's the equivalent of protesting obesity at a Weight Watchers clinic. What's worse, he did it at the very moment America's national pastime, football, was elevating Black men to its highest position, franchise quarterback, face of the league. The level of stupidity demonstrated by Kaepernick's behavior is and was historic. The fact that for nearly 3 years it was virtually illegal for Black people to criticize Cap's stunt damaged the perception of Black men. It created the appearance that the majority of us were as foolish as Cap. That perception has impact, particularly within football circles. The NFL became the greatest force in popular culture and television by strategically aligning itself with American patriotic ideals. The flag, the anthem, military, family values are part of the league's marketing. You can be cynical about the motives and the ethics, but you cannot deny the results. Pete Rozelle's vision created a league that generates billions of dollars and showers millions of those dollars on its 70% Black employee player base. Rap music and the NBA combined don't create as many Black American millionaires as the NFL. But for 3 years, we let the perception persist that we want to tear down the NFL over a mixed race kid who was radicalized by his non-Black girlfriend. These sorts of ridiculous perceptions about us, which are promoted by the mainstream media, undermine our quest for greater responsibility and leadership within the game. If the perception is we're not on board with the patriotic values that put the league in position to pay Russell $35 million, why enhance our power within the league? Miami Dolphins head coach Brian Flores gets this simple concept. That's why he blasted Jay-Z music and Kenny Steele's and ran the wide receiver out of Miami. Like Tony Dungy and Herm Edwards and Lovie Smith and Marvin Lewis and Jim Caldwell, Flores is carrying himself in a way that will create opportunities for other Black football coaches. We need more of that and less kneeling and whining. LeVar Arrington and Bucky Brooks are back. Let's move to Green Bay. Sponsored by ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, the Packers host the Seahawks in a divisional round matchup Sunday night on Fox. After an up-and-down regular season, Seattle barely got by an Eagles team devastated by injuries last week. Meanwhile, the Packers posted a 13-3 record this year, but only beat two teams with a winning record all season. I'm not bullish on either one of these teams. They have the lowest point differential of any of the teams left in the playoffs. I think the Seahawks are plus +7. Anyway, which team's more overrated? What's the more overrated playoff team, Seahawks or Packers?
I'm going to go Packers. The inconsistency I see offensively, you talk about their great wins this year. You got Vikings twice and you got the Chiefs. But then you look at the low points and you're like, oh, man, the Chargers and then obviously the 49ers. But the way the offense performed in those games, pretty anemic. One thing about the Seattle Seahawks and their point differential, they always find a way to be in games, whether they barely get by or they barely get beat, but they're around. Where I've seen some really low moments from this Packers team, especially offensively, so I would go with Green Bay.
Yeah, I think Green Bay is the most overrated team. Not only are they a team that is just beat up on not really good teams, they're 10-1 against teams that are 500 or worse, but when I look at their numbers, they're very average. They're right in the middle of the road against in everything, offense, defense. The only thing, the only category where they rank within the top 10 is points allowed on defense. And a lot of that is fueled by their turnovers. I don't know if they get in a heavyweight match against a really good team, if they're better. I'm going to say they're the most overrated squad left in the playoffs.
I'm going with Seattle. And the reason why I'm going with Seattle here is really a process of elimination. What is the biggest questions that I have going into the game? And the one that resonated the most with me was, can this Seattle offense carry this Seattle team through the playoffs? Can they carry them through this game against Green Bay? That's going to be the defining moment for this team, because they have now turned more offensive-centric than they have defensively. So can they do it? I'm not confident that they can go into this game. I think that Green Bay's defense is playing well enough to give them enough problems, whereas I see this Green Bay team being able to produce enough offense. So I think going into the game, I would say Seattle's overrated.
I'm going to say Seattle, and I'm going to pin it on the offensive coordinator, Brian Schottenheimer. I think that Seattle is a team that's still a little bit in conflict identity-wise. It is certainly Russell Wilson's team, but when I watch their offense, I'm like, man, I don't look like that's Russell Wilson's team. They still want to put handcuffs on Russell Wilson. And so to me, I haven't seen Seattle do what Baltimore did. They had success with Marty Morningweg last year and said, you know what, but we need to go deeper into Lamar. Let's make Greg Roman the offensive coordinator. I want to see Seattle go deeper into Russell Wilson and find the perfect offensive coordinator for Russell Wilson. I don't think they have it. That's why I always watch Seattle kind of with a side eye, like, man, Russell Wilson's your best player, but y'all don't act like it. And I've been watching this celebration of Marshawn Lynch, like he's going to come in and save the team.
Well, that's
like,
a big one. That's a big one. Like, running game,
well,
isn't there.
They have lost three running backs this year. So obviously the identity of that team, whatever you want to create and balance, that's been chaotic for them. The lean into Russell Wilson, some the naysayers would say, it's always been Russell Wilson built off a strong running game. Last year, they had the number one running game. This year, they have all the running backs and issues. So they've always tried to create that because that's what Pete Carroll likes to do. If you look at what the Packers are going to face right now, the Seahawks, they beat them 8 straight times at Lambeau. This game's at Lambeau. It's going to be a struggle for Seattle to go in there. Even though I think the Packers are overrated, I like how you said it. Defense is stronger in Green Bay than the offense in Seattle. That may just come down to simply
is. All right, Darnell, is there a Super 6 for the Seahawks-Packers game?
Yes, it is. And before the game kicks off, be sure to download the Fox Sports Super 6 app and play for free. Your chance to win Terry Bradshaw's $25,000. All right, guys, help our fans win some money. One of the questions is, how many total passing touchdowns will Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson combine for? Whitlock, Marcellus, give us a number.
I'm going 5, 3, and 2, and I'm going to say Aaron Rodgers has 3, Wilson has 2.
Okay, so you got 5 on it. I got 3. and I'm going to quote the movie Colors. 2-1, Holmes. 2 for Russell Wilson, 1 for you, Aaron Rodgers, 3 total.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval ratings for Andy Reid.
You know.
Okay, but first, give Marcellus Big Dummy of the Day.
What?
Make me happy.
Ain't gonna be able to do it. Not gonna be able to do it.
Hey, man, Big Dummy of the Day, go to the person that said, Andy Reid gonna wet the bed all over himself. You do know you wet the bed the night before you left for college, right, nephew?
Damn, that late?
Yeah, late. Too soon?
Oh, I got stories worse than that. All right. All right, let's talk Andy Reid.
Shameless.
Chiefs face off against the Texans this weekend Kansas City. Reid has been one of the NFL's top coaches for the last 2 decades, but he's often struggled in the playoffs and has never won the big one. Marcellus, does Reid need a Super Bowl to make the Hall of Fame?
No.
No,
that would be making a slam dunk first ballot. But here's the thing. If you're top 10 all time in any category for me, you should be a Hall of Famer in that same sport. He is 7th most all-time in wins in the playoffs. That's good enough for me.
Who's 6th? Marty Schottenheimer?
No, you better stop. I don't know. All I'm saying is Andy Reid is going down as one of the greatest coaches. He just needs that slam dunk, which is the champion.
He ain't a Hall of Famer.
No?
No. You got to win the Super Bowl.
Come on. But,
all right, Uncle Jimmy, I know. What do you think of my take on Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid being overworked?
Nephew,
yeah.
If Andy Reid want to make it to the Hall of Fame, you know what he need to do?
What?
He need to let Eric Bieniemy put his BSA on that Chiefs offense.
BSA.
Yeah, that's the brother's seal of approval on that Chiefs offense.
Yeah. And his name's
they need to let him do what he do.
It's B.
You know, let's let him draw up some plays. Hey, hold up. Shut your mouth.
What's his name?
Y'all let John Gruden run that. What was that he ran? Spider two wide banana?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What y'all afraid of? What you think Eric gonna run? Spicy two-piece with a biscuit.
Oh,
spicy two-piece with a biscuit. What the hell's the problem?
Spicy two-piece. Yeah.
Look, man, that's not the only downside to letting him really run the show.
That's too small.
You know how your people do. You know we fashionably late, so y'all know the delay of penalties is going to go through the roof.
Delay a game.
Delay a game.
Huh? Now, look, nephew, I know you don't agree with me. You know, you out here swashbuckling. You know, you taking the brother Eric Bieniemy's name in vain. Talking about he don't deserve a head coaching job.
Well, you got to earn it.
Now, see, I know why you can't stand it. Hey, keep it 100. I've been doing some psychosynanalyzing. You know? And like the great psychologist Siegfried and Roy said, this is a classic case of projectiling. And all that for you, all you laymans out there, all that means is my nephew taking what he got inside of him and projectiling it out on y'all. Putting all of it on y'all.
How am I projecting?
Look, you don't like that boy for the same reason that you don't like Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, or the late, great Muggsy Bowles.
Oh, that's true.
Bottom line, you got a problem with short people.
Yeah, that's part. True.
Doug Flutie, any of them.
But word on the street, don't nobody come up shorter than you. Yeah. Hey, that but you know true. What? I digress. This ain't about your personal shortcomings. Come on, man.
Shortcomings.
Look, man, this about you and me.
I thought he was 6'3". Sit down.
Look, now listen to me, dog. Let's quit laughing. Look at me just like Eric Bieniemy. I know what it's like to run an offense and then have somebody of a larger stature overshadow you and take credit for all the work you're doing.
You do? Who's that?
I'm talking about you. You should.
You what?
You doing the exact same thing. You doing the same thing to me that Andy Reid been doing to Eric Bieniemy all year.
Oh, I'm taking
Look,
credit.
The fact of the matter is, more I think about it, if I put a mustache on you, take away some of that melanin you got in you and squint your eyes a little bit. God damn it, you is Andy Reid. Ain't neither one of y'all been to the big one.
Let me get to my Talk Andy Reid approval rating. Okay. I actually moved him up 10 points from the last time. 72, all-star status. Moved him up 3 points in job performance and authenticity.
Wow, Andy Reid, that all-time status is pretty low for you. Andy Reid's one of the best to do it.
How you gonna be 81 nothing, Marcellus? You got him at a 20.
He gets in there, though. He gives his teams opportunities every single year. That's
Internet
the first
agrees
win,
with me, 73%.
I'm right. You're wrong.